Jessica Hagedorn's first novel, Dog Eaters, is set in Manila. The novel spans nearly 30 years, from the late 50s to the early 80s. It's about a dictatorship and about characters who live on fantasies from radio soap operas, American movies, and dance music. Hagedorn was born in the Philippines and came to the U.S. as a teenager in 1963, first to San Francisco and then to New York, where she's been a playwright, performance artist, and poet. I asked her to explain the term dog eaters, the title of her new book.
It's a slang term, sometimes contemptuously used, not just for Filipinos, but I think for many other Asians who, you know, commonly eat dog within the culture. I was inspired by a poem by a Philippine-American poet who lives in New York City. He wrote a poem called The Dog Eater, and it was about an outsider who is shunned by his own villagers and by the villagers in the place where he comes from. And every night he howls at the moon, and he lives on the outskirts of this town. And I was very moved by the image of this man who's forced to sort of live, you know, on the margins. And I thought it was an appropriate image for me. I played around with a lot of different titles, but none of them really struck me as this one did. And I knew it was a risky title, too, because it can be easily misunderstood.
You have a character in your novel who is the dictator's wife, mm-hmm. and in some respects she's not unlike Imelda Marcos. Mm-hmm. For instance, she has a shoe fetish.
Yes.
there's a paragraph about her that I'd like you to read.
Okay. The Manila International Film Festival is the First Lady's latest whim. She orders the city and slums rejuvenated with fresh coats of paint, windows and doorways lined with pots of plastic flowers, the streets swept and reswept by women in red and yellow sweatshirts with Metro Manila Aid printed in big black letters on the back and front. Even Uncle's shack gets the treatment. Funny thing is, it all looks fake. Painted scenery in a slum no one's going to bother visiting. But what the hell? We all get a big bang out of it. Uncle laughs the hardest, shaking his head in disbelief. Crazy bitch, he calls the First Lady. Talagang sirang ulo.
How did the end of the Marcos regime affect your ability to go back home and your eagerness to go back home?
Well,
to visit.
It had profoundly, I think, was a very moving, profoundly moving experience for a lot of us, and especially Filipino Americans. We suddenly felt this surge of hope that maybe things really could change, and that you could do it in a semi-peaceful manner, and you could have the whole world sort of suddenly become aware of you in this most positive light. So everyone wanted to go back and sort of witness it for themselves. And I was very sorry I couldn't be there when the actual overthrow happened. But I went home soon afterwards and was sorely disappointed.
In what way were you disappointed?
Well, because I saw that while certain things had changed in terms of, you know, freedom of speech had once again been established. You know, newspapers were once again, you know, able to publish whatever they wanted, and sometimes, you know, in a sort of scandalous manner. I mean, there's a lot of yellow journalism going on. The people's situation, the people who had nothing, it seemed like it had gotten much worse. And the same people were running everything. You know, the same people were in power.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like President Aquino is merely a figurehead. So that was, you know, incredibly painful to a lot of us to see. And to sort of have to admit to ourselves that all of that was for nothing, in a way.
Were your parents both Filipino?
Yes, they were of mixed blood, but they were both—they're both Filipino. I consider them Filipino because they've—you know—their parents were both living there. They'd been there. My father's mother, for example, came from another region outside Manila, and even though his father was part Spanish, he—you know—he was born in the Philippines, so. We're mestizo, but we consider ourselves Filipino.
What did your parents do for a living when you were growing up?
My father ran an import-export firm, and my mother was a housewife, his wife. She ran the house.
Was life when you were young a mix of Filipino and American culture?
and Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
Very much affected by, you know, the Spanish culture, and because of my father's Spanish roots. And we were all affected. I mean, you know, my peers, my family, were all affected by American media. So we were definitely into all the pop culture stuff that came from America.
I could get that sense from your book.
Yeah.
Everybody's always going to the movies and getting really caught up with the movie stars.
Movies and the songs that came to us. Our movies were a little late, and we didn't have television for a long time, for example. But our radio was very current with whatever was going on here. We got immediately in Manila, and so we were always up on all the latest in terms of music. But we also listened to Philippine music and went to Philippine movies back in those days. So we were sort of, you know, tri-cultural at all times.
How old were you when you moved to the United States?
14.
And you came with your mother?
Yes, and my brothers.
And your father stayed behind?
Yes.
Were your parents separated then?
Yes.
I see.
And we moved to California, and that's where I finished my schooling.
What was the occasion for your moving?
What was the occasion for the moving? My parents separated.
Well, no, I mean, you could have moved to another house.
Oh, no, my mother's very grand, and so, you know, she chose to make this big statement. Also, she had a sister who lived in California, who she hadn't seen in a long time, so it was a chance for her to visit with her and to make this really big move. So that's what we did. My brothers hated it, and they went back. They didn't like the American way of life, but for me, it was liberating.
How so?
Well, I think as female child, I found the freedoms here that are associated with, you know, just ordinary life, like being able to take a walk by yourself, being able to go to the movies by yourself, being able to take yourself to school and bring yourself home and take public transportation. I mean, things like that that I was not allowed to do alone. Back in the Philippines, you know, I found immensely liberating. And I think it was good for me. I always knew I wanted to write, and I knew that I had to sort of get away from that sheltered environment that I had grown up in.
Why wasn't it acceptable for a girl to take a walk by herself or go to a movie by herself?
Well, I think in the middle to upper classes, it was always this protective environment, especially about female children, you know. Oh, you might get kidnapped. Oh, you know, this watchfulness, this let's keep her a virgin until she's married, chaperones. You know, it's very Catholic in the Philippines. So I see a lot of similarities when I read other novels by Latin Americans, because the girls are, you know, they go to schools run by nuns. The boys go to schools run by Jesuit priests. And it's all very segregated and proper.
When you moved to the States, did you feel that suddenly you were seen by most of the people as a minority?
Oh, well, definitely. Yes.
And how did that change the way you saw yourself or the interactions you had with people?
Well, it politicized me, and it also Filipinized me. A friend of mine who's an actress who's Filipina and has lived here as long as I have told me that the interesting thing for her, and which I found true for myself, was that it took moving here to, you know, to make her see and make her aware of her position in the world and to make her feel more nationalistic about the Philippines. And I found that really true. It was something I had sort of taken for granted, and I assumed people were aware of my culture, and, you know, I kept getting these questions that I found terribly ignorant, like, why do you speak English so well, and where exactly is the Philippines? And one famous writer, as a matter of fact, I met recently, you know, in the last 5 years, so this is not some old story, said to me that she had always known that Filipinos had their children swim from island to island, that we were really good swimmers, and, you know, practically said we had tails and we lived in the trees. And, you know, I'm incredibly ignorant. Really ignorant stuff. So it angered me, and then I realized, you know, that I had to read and find out why so much of my history was suppressed in this country when we knew so much about the West and certainly so much about America.
Do you think that your writing, especially maybe some of your poems, have been influenced by African-American writing?
Yes, most definitely. It was when I first came to this country, and I was, you know, still obviously an adolescent trying to be a writer, a serious writer. You know, I had all these pretentious thoughts about myself. I would experiment and sort of think, here I am writing in English. It's you know, is this really the language of my sort of soul? And I didn't know. And I was listening to a lot of music at that time, and it was sort of my way into the American culture, pop music. And I felt a kinship with black music, and through that language, sort of a cynical, ironic language, and that hipness and that coolness, that ability to withstand pain or endure pain, I started reading a lot of different poets at the time. I was writing a lot of poetry, and the poets I felt the closest to were the poets of color, and I picked up on those rhythms, the street rhythms, and I felt very comfortable writing in that style. And I think that helped open me up. And then I started reading, as I got older, I started reading the works of a lot of Hispanic writers. And also, I really felt a closeness to them because of their traditions, you know, being so similar to mine.
Well, Jessica Hagedorn, thanks a lot for talking with us.
You're very welcome, Terry.
Jessica Hagedorn's novel, Dog Eaters, is published by Pantheon.